This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'm very proud to welcome Iberia Bank as Discover Lafayette's premier sponsor. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Iberia Bank supports educational, cultural, and business development efforts that make a difference in the many communities they serve, including sponsoring this podcast. For more information, please visit iberiabank.com. Our guest today is Beau Bullier, a partner in CoSource Financial Group that he founded in 2001. Beau creates comprehensive retirement plans that meet the needs of business owners and their executives. A native of South Louisiana, Beau graduated from LSU with a degree in finance and then earned an MBA here in UL Lafayette. He participated in UCLA's Anderson School of Management, where he became one of the first certified 401k professionals in the state of Louisiana. He lives in New Iberia with his wife, Casey, and their four children. On the civic and volunteer side, Beau was named one of the top 20 under 40 leaders in Acadiana by the Daily Advertiser and the 705 in 2013. He's a member of the Council 11793, am I saying that right, Beau?
Yes.
For the Knights of Columbus. He was a leader on the team that established the Iberia Parish Foundation, which is now an affiliate of the Community Foundation of Acadiana. We're going to talk a lot more about that. And I'm just going to go through a laundry list of some of your involvements, Beau. You're on the Iberia Cultural Resources Association Board. You've served on the Iberia Parish Industrial Development Foundation, member and past president of the New Iberia Kiwanis Club. And just this past year, late in the fall, you were awarded the Civic Service Award by the Greater Iberia Chamber of Commerce. And I know we're going to talk about Mardi Gras, what Bayou Mardi Gras has done, and most importantly, the leader in me. So, Beau Bullier, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Jan, thank you for having me. This is exciting. It's exciting to be able to visit with you and to talk about all those things that I'm really passionate about. So I'm looking forward to our talk.
Let's talk about our mutual friends. So we had not met before today, but we've talked on the phone. Our mutual friend is Chris Raider, who's another New Iberia native, and he told me you've got to get Beau on the show. And we're really focusing on South Louisiana. When I say Discover Lafayette, I'm really talking about South Louisiana. And we have not really had a focus on New Iberia. And I think you carry a lot of the current energy from all the good things that are going on in your community.
Well, speaking of Chris in New Iberia, you know, he is, I know he lives in Lafayette, but he's still, you know, Mr. New Iberia.
Is he?
His roots are there, his friends are there, his family's there, and if you get him aside for a second, he'll tell you about how wonderful Iberia Parish is.
And Catholic High,
that's
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Another common thing we have in common.
Yeah, and I'm smiling before we start. J.D. Regard was an early guest on Discover Lafayette, and he has pointed out to me that all good emanates from New Iberia. So
I second that. I mean, coming from the biggest nut that we all know.
He is the chief nut.
The chief nut. Yeah. I think if the chief nut says it flies with me.
I know. So let's kind of go back to your early days. You grew up in New Iberia. Your family's still there. Can you talk about what led you to study finance and got you into your current business of helping people do their financial planning?
I'd love to. My dad is a CPA who never worked in an accounting practice. He always worked in industry and worked in the oil field. And he would come home very passionate about what he did, just from the number standpoint. My mother is a registered nurse who did a lot of home health work. And you know, the passion that both of them had, my mom for helping those who were less fortunate, who couldn't leave their homes from a nursing standpoint, my dad with the financial background, mm-hmm. I really think it was a combination of some of the positive traits from both of them that led me into a very service-oriented career on the financial services
right.
side.
Right.
You know, most of our business, 90% of our business is retirement plans. So we spend all of our days visiting with employees mm-hmm. who really wouldn't otherwise have total access to someone from a financial service standpoint. A lot of times, you know, your advisors there, they have to be paid for what the services that they provide. And a lot of times they lean towards folks with big balances and a lot
right.
of money.
Right.
And so through the retirement plans, we feel it's our calling and our duty to service and work with all of the employees at all walks of life. From mm-hmm. we meet with the executives and the business owners, but also, you know, from the truck driver and the welder
yeah.
and the plant and operator from an equipment standpoint, from, you know, those folks don't normally have someone available to them, and mm-hmm. we really have passion for seeing them have a fruitful retirement and
right.
making sure that we give them the time and energy that they deserve, because they work just as hard as the rest of us, and so it's something that we're really excited about doing. It gets us up for the last 18 years mm-hmm. every morning, and I'm just as energized about what we do today as when we started in 2001.
Right. You know, at this point in my life, I realized how important it was to save. And my husband, John Swift, has always been frugal because of his family background. But my family didn't have much. And so it was more about having enough to spend. And so I didn't have that saving mentality. It can be hard as a young person in your mid-20s to think, I'm going to be 65 one day. I better think, or maybe just at least put aside a little bit. Is it tough when you meet with people? Like, I know you can't give out specific financial advice, but is it tough to encourage people to be a good steward of what they have and to maybe look ahead?
That's some of our secret sauce. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what we do, is we try and have that, you know, it can be an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old, a 25-year-old.
How do you get them to save?
We try and get put ourselves in their shoes and, mm-hmm. and help them to understand the importance of it. And a lot of times after sitting down with us and the 401k meetings, they'll have the energy and the excitement about mm-hmm. putting monies away. And we try and build a picture for them of what it would look like 65 years old. And, you know, a lot of times it's
grows.
It grows, but it's not us telling the story. It's a lot of times it's a more seasoned worker that's mm-hmm. been there, you know, for 20 or 30 years that's saying, hey, you know, this is what I did and look what I've been able to accomplish, or vice versa. They're telling the other side of the story saying, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't start saving at a young enough age, and, you know, I could only imagine what that would have been
right.
like if I had started in my early 20s.
Right. I know sometimes the people that don't seem like they have much are actually the ones that have socked away what they could.
That's right.
But then it grows over time. And I think about some young people, I'm talking about just saving even in case they get a flat tire.
Right.
You know, a lot of us, people don't have money.
No,
and it can be tough, I'm sure.
And look, I get it. I mean, I have four kids.
Do you have any money?
That's right. I know my father told me that, don't worry, one day when the kids are grown, mm-hmm. you'll open your wallet and you'll have a couple of dollars in it.
Yeah.
But I know what it costs to feed a family of six. I know what it costs to send them to baseball practice and to mm-hmm. dancing. My second daughter's graduating from high school this year, and she's been in dance. Been in dance all her life, so I know what it costs to send to dance mm-hmm. schools and to the dance camps and to baseball and basketball practices. And so, you know, we try and relate to the employees mm-hmm. and let them understand that, hey, we're just like you and trying to
right.
save as well. And you know, it's really inspirational whenever we see an employee who's taken us up on the opportunity to save, and years later they come back mm-hmm. and they say, you know, thank you for taking the time. No one else had ever been willing to do that, and you know, it's a rewarding yeah. a very rewarding career that we're in.
Well, you're in your 18th year now. I know you opened up in Lafayette. I want to say you're first office was on Rue Beauregard.
Yeah, on Cali Saloon.
Right off of Cali Saloon, which was easy for you to get to from your home in the New Iberia area. But you've been able to see the fruits of your efforts. Now, you have more than one office location.
Yeah. We have an office still in Lafayette. We have our main office in New Iberia, but we also have one in Thibodeau. And my business partner, Sean Harrison, who started CoSource with me, he's in Thibodeau. And we have one just outside of Beaumont, Texas. And we are hopefully going to have one in New Orleans by the end of 2019. So we've been able to grow. Most of our clients are up and down Highway 90 or I-10 between New Orleans and Houston.
Right.
And so, but it hasn't always been easy. I mean, when we started CoSource, it was in June of 01.
You were very young. Yeah, I'm thinking 26.
Right.
How old were you?
A buddy of mine from New Iberia who moved back, Mike Manus, who moved back to New Iberia after living in Baton Rouge, said going into business for yourself is having the ultimate act of faith in your ability to succeed. And so, yeah, we were young and maybe.
Well, what did you have to lose, though?
Like, that was the thought.
You could always probably go work for an established company.
That was the thought.
I think that's the best time.
But 2 months after we opened, we had 9/11 hit.
Yeah.
And so to start a retirement plan firm, and have that hit us with, and then you had the .com crash.
Right.
We're trying to deal with businesses who are trying to to hold on to everything they had. You know, a couple of years later, you had Hurricanes Katrina and Rita.
Yeah.
Then you had the real estate market bust that hurt us all. You had the BP oil spill, the downturn we've seen in South Louisiana. If you had asked me 18 years ago, hey, this is what's going to happen over the next 18 years. Are you sure you want to go into this business?
Well,
I don't know if my answer would have been the same, but I'm glad we've done it. We've been able to be successful at what we do over those years. And
well, you don't have gray hair yet, and you don't have any wrinkles, so apparently you've survived.
Four teenagers, the gray is coming quick.
Well, let's talk about, I want people to know where to find you, but I want to get into your community work. For anybody that's interested in calling your representatives, CoSource Financial Group, where would they visit?
They can get on our website, CoSourceFinancial.com.
Okay.
They can call our office at 606-9860.
Okay.
And we're always, we have a live person that answers the phone.
Yeah.
Unless we have everyone tied up with other customers, we have a lot. You know, so you get some good down home service with some good down home people.
Well, good. Well, let's talk about you and New Iberia. When I was researching you, Bo, you've been involved in so many things that affect the quality of life of people in Iberia Parish. I know it's a bigger thing for you than just meeting people for your work. I mean, you've done everything from being active in the local chamber that helps business to the industrial development, the Kiwanis Club, which everybody knows, all the good work Kiwanis does, starting Bayou Mardi Gras. I just want to let you start talking about what has motivated you to honestly change and enhance what people can experience in Iberia Parish.
A couple of years ago, I was fortunate to be able to meet, they have a TED Talk, by a gentleman by the name of Simon Sinek. One of his big questions that he asks his audiences and those that he motivates is wanting to know the why behind what it is you do and who it is you serve. And it's something that since I've met Simon that I've racked around my mind very often. And I think if you go back to what we do with CoSource and the way we serve the all walks of life, white collar, blue collar, and what we do in the community as well, it's all about other people, and it's all about providing that servant leadership in all aspects of life, whether it's at CoSource or whether it's at Sacred Heart Church, where I'm very active involved, or the Kiwanis Club or the Iberia Parish Foundation, or even the Mardi Gras Parade stuff that you mentioned. I think it's all about enhancing the lives of those around you. I think when it's your time to go meet St. Peter, I don't think St. Peter's going to say, hey, you know, what is it? What have you amassed that you are bringing to the pearly gates? I think he's going to be asking, hey, what have you done for your fellow man and woman? What have you done to help those around you? How have you spread the love of the gospel and helped do my work on earth? And I think is something that we all need to do more of. I think as much as I feel like that we've done over the years, I still think we're on the tip of everything that we can do here in South Louisiana.
I do too.
I think we have so many great people, yeah. So many passionate people, and I know we're going to be talking about Iberia a lot, mm-hmm. but whether it's in Iberia Parish, Lafayette Parish, I can't help but to find people who want to make those around them better, and those types of people inspire me to do more. And you know, I'll turn 44 in a couple of weeks, and I feel that this is the beginning. This is not the end of what we've mm-hmm. accomplished. We have a lot more to do.
Yeah. So using the gifts you've been given.
That's correct.
So let's start. You know, we were talking about the Iberia Parish Foundation, which is now an affiliate under the umbrella of the Community Foundation of Acadiana, run by our mutual friend Raymond Hebert. When that was started, that was a $100 investment. So talk a little bit about that story, about how that began and what was the impetus behind it.
So we had a group that we had of young professionals that we had gathered. Our name was Bourgeois 2030.
Bourgeois.
And Bourgeois being the entrepreneurial class in France the years. And so we had these thoughts over a couple of visits and some creative sessions at Clementine's restaurant in New Iberia. And 2030 being looking out 20 and 30 yeah. years and saying, okay, what do we want Iberia Parish to look like? What, mm-hmm. you know, what changes can we make? And as part of, you know, this foundation, we thought, all right, what if they had created this foundation 30 years ago or 40 years ago?
Right.
What would it look like today? And what kind of an impact could it be having on our community? Mm-hmm. And we didn't say, hey, you know, it's going to benefit the arts or it's going to benefit education. We looked at it collectively and realized that through a community foundation, it wasn't necessarily picking ideas, but it was mm-hmm. picking passions. So you are finding those families, those businesses, those philanthropists who are passionate about a certain part of the community and are willing to give. If you can connect those passionate people with the places that they really feel most passionate to give, well, now you're just a conduit for making good things happen.
Right.
And that was the thought behind it. And we really have done a great job. And the success stories are everywhere on what's come out of this $100 mm-hmm. commitment to the Community Foundation of Acadiana. And,
yeah.
and we're really excited about where it is now, what we've done, and what we're going to have it do in the future.
Now the money has grown.
Oh, it's almost $4 million,
uh-huh.
and you know, we started out. We Iberia Bank is the sponsor for this, so noted to say Iberia Bank was, you know, gave us one of our first $30,000 commitment back when we got it started.
Right,
Taylor Barra, who was the regional mm-hmm. president at the time in our area, understood what we were trying to do. We had him as a member of our initial mm-hmm. board. And Iberia Bank stepped up and said, hey, we like the idea. We like
yeah.
the way that it can impact the community. And they ponied up, and
yeah.
the rest is history.
They really do invest in making our communities better across the South.
Correct.
Right.
We've had, you know, initially, we have a couple of different pockets of money. One of those pockets is what we call a discretionary a pocket where donors who want to benefit Iberia mm-hmm. Parish or who live in Iberia Parish can set up their own private
right.
funds. And then we have a non-discretionary fund where our board can use the interest and some a little bit of the principal that's given during the year, but a very small amount, and give it to the charities and, mm-hmm. and interest in Iberia Parish. And we've seen a lot of grants to schools, to nonprofit organizations.
Right.
So, you know, in the $3,000 to $4,000 range, some of them smaller. The Cultural Resources Association has been a benefit of a couple of our okay. our grants. But you know, even after the BP oil spill, the BP gave Iberia Parish, I think it was $500,000, and $250,000 was given to the foundation to basically run a competitive grant cycle to gift money mm-hmm. to organizations that were going to draw tourism related and hopefully be able to
right.
to be some sort of continued ongoing benefit to Iberia Parish. We gave $20,000 through this cycle to the On Tap on tap as a similar to the 705 group in Lafayette. It's a young business group who basically it's all charity driven, to give back to the community. Very, very involved, very motivating. Wes Robinson is kind of the leader and the creator of that, but he's got a team of people who are very passionate about Iberia Parish. They had this event they wanted to put on there where they were going to bring dragon boats to the Bayou Teche, and they were going to have dragon boat races. And they had a great plan. It was a great idea. It was hard to imagine having 20 dragon boats in the Bayou Teche, but we believed in their efforts.
Yeah.
And so our $20,000 investment in on tap and the dragon boats, they've given away through the monies they've raised over the last, I think we just had our seventh dragon boat race, over $100,000.
Oh my goodness.
So it's not only the $20,000 that we were able to get them to get it started, but the reciprocal benefits have been, it's multiplied, and that's a perfect example of something that we've been able to do that's just kept giving over the years.
Right. Now, you've mentioned to me, the leader in me is very important. Your philosophy, what we can do to help children, was that something Iberia Parish Foundation also assisted with?
It is. So, Dan Alexander, who is a board member of the Lafayette Education Foundation, again, we try to learn from those around us and from others. We were talking about another leadership initiative that I was involved with young people in Louisiana, and he asked me one day just over a visit, have you ever heard of Leader in Me? And I had not. And we went on to talk about Stephen Covey and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is a book that my father gave me when I was in high school to read. So I was, although the habits, I couldn't necessarily recite them at the time, were familiar to me. I understood the concept. I took a trip with Dan, and we went to Martin Petitjean Elementary in Acadia Parish. And
they've had good success there.
Yes, I was moved to emotion and to tears. I mean, to see the kids do what they did. We sat there in a presentation and listened to kids present the results of their school for 20 minutes. I never heard never heard an adult speak. And then realize in Iberia, our elementary schools go from kindergarten to sixth grade. And at Acadia Parish, it was, at Martin Petitjean, at least, it was the third grade. So we had second and third graders leading this leadership symposium. And I was just taken back for it. And I said, look, if this is a model that we can spread to Iberia, we can't pass up this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so we talked to the board about it. We got the board to go to Martin Petitjean as well and have them behind it. They walked out of there in tears, just all inspired about what they saw. And we partnered with a local business, Bayroid Transportation. Bayroid helped give us the seed money and we had other local donors as well. But Bayroid was the main match money that we were able to attract. And we got Leader in Me started at Daspit Elementary, and I believe we're in our third year now. And
how's it going?
It's going phenomenal.
The kids are
loving it, and you know there's the teachers have to go through a process.
They have to accept the challenges that come with it.
It's not something that you can push down on teachers and staff from the top. It's got
to
be something that
they
want and they buy into. But when they buy into it, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I really think we focus so much in Louisiana on our readiness skills for job training. We talk about not having to attract businesses, our education system, this back and forth. I think if we start with the youngest of our children and teach them some of the fundamentals, some of the simple things that they may not get at home.
Right.
How to think win-win in a certain situation. When you're getting into a debated discussion with someone, thinking with the end in mind before you, and these, I describe the Leader in Me is changing the DNA of a school. It's not a program that you're putting into a school system. It's really changing the DNA. It changes the entire culture of that school. And I think it's the least we could do to ensure success of these students for when they
that's
get
exciting.
Out of high school. It really, really is. We were excited last year. So we started with our foundation in Bayroid Transportation. We went to the United Way of Iberia, and we brought Miss Carlene Ruley back to Martin. Martin Petitjean's a sales pitch. So once they see these kids, once it's full in action, it's hard to resist. We got Carlene to come and see it. She had colleagues in the United Way of Acadiana and in Lafayette Parish. actually the United Way had taken it and was running with it, had taken it from the Lafayette Education Foundation, was running with it, and Dr. Kip Schumacher and the Schumacher Foundation is really extremely passionate about it. They agreed to partner with United Way of Iberia and us in Iberia Parish, and last year we added three more schools
to it.
So
exciting.
So it started as an initial catalyst with Bear Rock Transportation and DASP Elementary. We now have four schools, and we're hoping to add a fifth next fall if everything works out right.
You know, it's funny. I think when we grew up, a lot of us at least, we were around more extended family. So if you weren't quite thinking things through, you know,
you had somebody
would pop you, you know. But we don't always have that. And so little people, they're sponges. So if they can get it early, and then they bring it home to their own families, and it's I think it works. So, I've seen it in the schools. I love it.
And when you talk to the administration and Martin Pettijohn, you know, it started as a school initiative, but it bled into the community. Mm-hmm. And there's programs. I think there's a litter program right now in Rain that has taken off through the efforts of first and second graders at Martin Pettijohn, who wanted to have a litter campaign. And so I think we're going to see some of that in Iberia Parish too. And the results, we have the two elementary schools in Generette, or some of the ones that came on board recently with Leader and Me, and talking to the superintendent in Iberia Parish and some of the other administration, they say it's transforming the schools in Generette. And so we're really, really excited about it. And I can't wait to see what these young students, after having these years of Leader in Me as part of their lives.
Yeah, looking ahead when they're in high school beyond, how did that change their lives?
They'll come out of high school with all the skills that employers look for.
Soft skills that we want.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right. That's great. So let's see. You've done some other things. Let's talk Mardi Gras. You know, my husband here in Lafayette Parish loves Mardi Gras, and I know that you do too. And a few years back, you guys re-implemented, I guess, an organized Mardi Gras for Iberia, for New Iberia. Am I saying that right?
Yep, Iberia Parish.
So Bayou Mardi Gras. And so for the past 3 years, you've been engaged in that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's hard to grow up in Louisiana and not like Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Mardi Gras, except for maybe some of the crowded streets at times. But it's always been a part of all of our lives. And in Iberia Parish, the crew of Andalusia, which I'm a part of, had always put on the Mardi Gras parade. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of gentlemen that had done it for 30 plus years, and they just got worn out.
Right.
It's a lot of work for the volunteers. And it's expensive, and we had different costs that had come up, and so they decided not to have it. So we went without a Mardi Gras parade for 1 year in Iberia Parish. And it's amazing how many phone calls that I personally got, and I know others got, about, hey, what happened to the parade?
Right.
When are we going to have, why aren't we having a parade? What can we do to have it back? Mm-hmm. And a gentleman, Pat Norris, with Norris International, called me up one day and called Mike Watney and Wes Robinson, who we talked about was with On Tap, and said, hey, we want to start this parade again. Would y'all be interested? And it didn't. And took 2 seconds, and we all said, "Hey, we're on board with this." And so we're in our third year now. We've grown the parade. With Andalusia, I believe we'd normally have 11 or 12 floats. Mm-hmm. We've been in the 20 float range for the last 3 years. We had a high school band from New Orleans come in last year. We had another marching band this year come in. The Fat City Drum Corps came into Iberia Parish this year.
They were unbelievable.
But so we want to bring a little bit of New Orleans with us to New Iberia.
Yeah, the spirit.
And have a little bit of that sizzle on the Bayou Teche, but to bring it home.
Is it only on Tuesday, or do you do night parades?
We do a night parade. It's been a Saturday for the last 3 years. We've let off Mardi Gras in Acadiana. We've been the first parade.
Okay.
And so we're going to probably try and continue that tradition.
Right. Down Main Street? Like, where's
down
the
Main
parade?
Street. So it starts on Main Street in New Iberia. It wraps around, crosses the bayou, and ends up in City Park.
Oh, wow.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's the last Saturday in January next year, maybe Saturday, the January 28th in 2020.
I don't even know when Mardi Gras is next year, but that's early.
We had to start planning, so we have to plan it to reserve the floats and all that. But it's been a phenomenal. And again, we talk about doing good things for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. We did that for the right reason of bringing back a parade. Excuse me, but it became more than that.
Yeah.
It it became an uplifting experience for all those. We had so many phone calls and letters to the editor and mm-hmm. from others to, hey, that meant so much to us to bring back this parade. It brought back a lot of energy, renewed commitment to Iberia mm-hmm. Parish. This year, we had a classmate of mine, Kayla Richard Ronsonnet, who's suffering with kidney disease. She had a kidney transplant. I'm going to get my dates wrong, but maybe 10 years ago, and that transplant's failing. Oh. And so she is looking for a kidney donor, a person who is willing to donate their kidney if it's a match. They had what's called a Kidney for Kayla float that they created and to promote the kidney disease awareness.
Yeah.
And, the legs grew into that, and the volunteers that stepped up to help out with the Kidney for Kayla was remarkable. They had T-shirts, they had a float, we did a little video for them, but I mean, there was big newspaper articles, but all again helping people for the right reasons in the parish, with no strings attached to it, just doing things to enhance the lives of those around you, to help those who were suffering with kidney disease, and to help Kayla and her family as well.
That.
It was really, really neat.
But I do want to say, for people that have never put on a Mardi Gras parade,
it's work.
I had no idea. You have to, first you have to get permits, the police are involved, the safety support teams, you've got public works picking up trash after, you've got to organize the floats and get them trained on how to be safe. And I had no idea until my husband really got involved locally that the volunteers they're invisible. All people know is they can walk down the street and catch beads.
That's right.
And there's so much more to it. So for you guys to start that it's a big commitment.
It was,
it is expensive.
We did the first one in probably about 3 months time period.
You did?
So we put it all together.
So you
together.
Didn't know better.
Well, correct.
No.
I think it was some of that blind being naive to it, and we didn't know better.
But it was successful.
Yeah, and we had four chiefs in the room who all wanted to be Indians, mm-hmm. and so we were able to tackle the task. We didn't ask questions.
That's
always
good.
We had faith in each other's ability to get things done. And
so you didn't ride. Were you like a coordinator?
So no, a couple of us ended up riding. A couple of us coordinated on the streets. I was able to ride the couple of years, but
you like that?
I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it. Somebody's got to be able to troubleshoot future parades from a float perspective.
Yeah. I'm experienced. I know.
That's right.
I know what can go wrong.
That's right.
It's probably always happened to me.
But you talk about safety issues. We had we had a float catch on fire one year.
So, a generator?
Yeah, it was a generator. But again, we had fire extinguishers ready. These are things that you don't think, all right, we need our fire extinguishers. We had it planned out.
And you need insurance.
That's right.
I mean, there's so many
insurance.
Things
the police,
to think about.
The police force is incredible.
Yeah, they are.
A couple of years, for the first 2 years, we had the Iberia Parish Sheriff's Department that worked really, really well with us. Well, now in New Iberia, we have a city police department that came back this year. This year, we had the city police working for us. We had, at the beginning of the parade, we had state police and sheriff's department and city police all working hand in hand. And everybody came together to make a very safe environment. And the fire wasn't a big fire. We were able to get it real quick.
I know, but still.
But it was the float.
Fire is a good fire.
It was the end of the parade. The float was in front of me, and I saw smoke coming. I was panicking. So, but it went really well. And again, everybody did what they were supposed to do.
I'm glad we can laugh about
to handle it.
Me too. And not be talking about what could have happened. So, well, with all of your volunteer work, I know that the chamber just recently awarded you the Civic Service Award, and I know it's because of all the things you've done. Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank
on
you.
That.
Like I said earlier, at 40, almost 44 years old, I feel like this is the beginning. I don't feel, and Janet Falk, who called me to let me know about the award, I said, Janet, I said, I think I'm too young to get these things. This is supposed to be someone who's in their 50s or 60s. But I accepted it for the sole fact that I want others to see how fun it can be to serve the community. This is not something that that causes stress in my life. This is something that makes me feel better to give back to the community, and it helps me to sleep better at night knowing that I've done my part. We also had talking about the chamber and not really kind of on the service side of it.
Janet Falk.
Janet Falk.
I know her.
She's the executive director of the chamber.
Yeah.
They have the World Gumbo Championship.
Oh, wait, talk about that.
Yeah. So this was pretty neat.
I know.
So
and you're a cook.
Yeah, I cook with the Kiwanis team.
Yeah.
We have talking about a team of chiefs and everybody wants to be an Indian.
I know.
And we have We've Andy Swallow led our gumbo team for so many years, and we won many, many times under Andy's direction.
What type of gumbo?
So historically, we've done two of them. We did a seafood gumbo, mm-hmm. and then we did, and so there's three categories. You have a seafood category, chicken and sausage category, and then the melange category.
Oh.
So we competed in the seafood. Melange is everything else.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so we competed in the seafood category, and we would compete in the melange category with a smoked turkey and andouille. Well, when 4 years ago, Andy asked me to take over the team, and I said, well, we're not doing two gumbos anymore. We're just going to do one to make it a little bit easier. And so we've won a lot of titles under Andy, mm-hmm. and we've won in the melange category 3 out of the last 4 years. We won first place. But the cool thing, you know, winning it is, we're pretty competitive with it, but the real cool thing is last year, Southern Living Magazine
came out.
And they did a huge spread on the gumbo cook-off, and it was such a good promotion for Iberia Parish and for Acadiana.
Yeah.
I had phone calls from a buddy whose sister read about it in Virginia.
Isn't that something?
And another buddy who I used to work with 20 years ago, who lives in Louisville, Kentucky, mm-hmm. and his wife picked up a magazine to learn how to cook a gumbo and realized that our recipe was in January's issue.
I meant to bring that up. Now, I do have a technical question.
Okay.
Should a gumbo ever have tomatoes or eggs in them?
Well, that's going to be a personal preference. So
I judged gumbo cook-offs, and I was shocked to see some of the things people put in gumbo.
When you get close to New Orleans, it's got a lot of tomatoes in it.
Uh-huh.
So,
like tomatoes and okra?
Correct. Yeah,
much here, huh?
No, you don't see that very often here. You know, my personal opinion is if you're going to have any kind of tomatoes in it, whoever's tasting it shouldn't know that it's in there. It's not a tomato based. It's a roux and stock base, and that's how it should be.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, that's right. But it's just different. It's just we cook a little bit different than
they do
in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I think if you go to the gumbo cook-off, which is always the second weekend in October, mm-hmm. you can taste a wide variety of gumbos.
Yeah.
And you know, normally somewhere in the neighborhood of about 100 teams come in and
what a fun
challenge
event.
For it. People from other states come in to challenge. I mean,
now what about potato salad? Do you put that? Do you ever scoop it?
I don't scoop it.
I didn't learn that growing up.
I will dip. So I don't eat my gumbo with rice, which is.
I don't either.
So I just
like the broth.
I do.
Yeah.
But what I'll do is I'll get my carbs from a scoop of potato salad.
Yeah, you put it in there,
and then dip it in there. But I don't put my potato salad in the middle of the gumbo.
You don't stir it.
No, I don't do that.
Sun.
Yeah, it just dirties it.
These
up
are technical
too much.
Questions. I've never been able to ask any of our guests. So.
Yeah.
Well, what issue? Can we go back and look in Southern Living?
It's January's issue of this year, 2019.
All right. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
We had fun with it, too, because with the Southern Living staff, you know, they asked me if they could we could give the recipe, and I said, sure, but we had never written down a recipe before.
Oh.
And she wanted it for 12 people, and I said, well, we're cooking for about 500 people.
And you do the roux from scratch.
We do, yeah, it's part of the roux. It's a requirement, and as a side note, only have one a rite of passage in our house is by the time you graduate, you have to be able to cook a gumbo from scratch.
At least once.
So that's right.
45 minutes.
So only
stirring.
One of my youngest is the only one who hasn't done it yet, but he's going to have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He just turned 13, so he's due for a day of gumbo cooking with his daddy.
Right.
So
every year.
It's every year. But when Southern Living contacted us, they wanted it for, I believe, 12 people or 14 people. So every year we cook a big gumbo for Christmas every year, but we're still cooking it for probably about 30 or 40 people. So I cooked that gumbo. I had to measure everything as we went, and then I just cut it all in half.
Yeah.
And but
I'm sure it's fine.
But they have a test kitchen that cooks it.
Yeah, they'll make
before
sure.
they publish it. And so they did I did a little video blog for them for the person who was asking for the recipe, because she was going to try it as well, to kind of coach her along. They came back. The test kitchen loved it, and so
that sounds delicious.
So we got January's edition. It was great promotion for South Louisiana.
I did see those articles, and I wanted to bring it up.
Now, as a caution, the picture they're showing in that article for the gumbo, is not the picture of our gumbo. There must have been a picture of some of the gumbo they cooked, but there's also a page full of candid shots of people from the cook-off, and you can see what some really good gumbos look like.
Right. Well, that's exciting. I do want to say one of our guests in the past was George Graham, and I had always been taught by my Aunt Pearl, like you're talking about with your kids, how to make, you know, the roux from scratch. But I did try Rox's roux, and it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So I know when you're competing, you've got to do everything from scratch. But for home cooks that are not great cooks, it's okay to get some help.
And it saves some time if you use it.
And it's delicious. So I did enjoy Rock Scissors. I want to get that in for them.
Good.
But so we're here with Jason Sikora, our partner with Raider Solutions. And I know that you two know each other through mutual partnerships between Raider Solutions and CoSource Financial. You've been writing notes. Do you have some questions?
Yeah. What's the secret to your gumbo?
The stock is easy.
Is that what
it's the stock? I mean, everybody, it seems to be overlooked. I mean, the stock is where it's at. The roux, if we all can end up being the same depending on the temperature, mm-hmm. and the stock is where the flavors comes from. And I mean, you have to be committed to patience.
You boil like shrimp shells.
Yeah, depending and, I mean, on you, yeah. So when we're doing the smoked turkey, you know, and we are making the stock out of turkey carcasses and the smoked mm-hmm. turkeys that we get, and it's a big part of the flavor. I mean, if you eat just our stock. Mm-hmm. Before it's a gumbo,
it's delicious.
It doesn't taste too bad. So I mean, if that's generating a lot of flavor for you, that's the first start.
Gotcha. So I wanted to thank you because I've spoken to you and your staff about investing in 401ks and things that were, as a roadie, I never thought about, and that encouraged me to talk to other people I know who are, you know, bankers and investors and kind of figure this whole thing out. So just sitting with you and figuring out how to roll over money and do things like that has been a big encouragement to save. So thank you for that. And your staff, Katie, and all of them they're great. And the fact that they're willing to drive over here and talk to us, and I don't have to go to
that's
you
right.
guys, that's
right.
awesome.
That's what we enjoy doing. We enjoy being in your office. We can't get a true feeling of what it is you do and why it is you do what you do. Mm-hmm. Unless we come to you, unless we're sitting in Raider Solutions standpoint, sitting and seeing y'all's darkened lit room and understanding y'all are a bunch of tech guys over here and getting the job done. But we need to see and feel that. Same thing as if we are going out to a sugar mill and we're working with people who are working on the mechanics of the mill. I mean, we need to understand what it is that they're doing on a day-to-day basis before we can really help them on preparing for their future.
That makes sense. And you do bring up a good point that our office is very dark because there's a lot of computer screens and a lot of tech nerds sitting behind them. So yeah, we keep all the lights off.
Like, I like your tech nerds. When I call, they handle everything real quick. When we first started doing business with you all, I was the IT guy, and I was spending so much of my personal time rebooting servers and trying to update software. And now so you complimenting my staff, but let me tell you about at Raider, y'all. It makes it so easy for us just to send a support at RaiderSolutions.com email saying,
they respond.
And you get on my computer, you solve it. I have zero downturn time, and it's made us be better at what we do, and it allows us to be able to serve you all better because we're not worried about all the IT commotion that we were worried about in years past. So it's a mutual respect for each other. It's a great, you know, Jan used the word partnership. It's a great partnership.
It is.
And so we're thankful for you all as well.
Thank you. It's always good to hear feedback, and it's, we strive to make it easy for you. I mean, that's like our motto, right? You know, you just want it to work, and we understand. I think the other day we had 100% answer call rate, which is what we strive for.
That's awesome.
We had 115 phone calls come in. We got every single one of them. Nothing went to the answering service.
Excellent.
And we want to do that and take care of you guys right away. So I appreciate that. I know you can't give advice into investing, but in terms of your job doing retirement investing, what's the hardest or most difficult part of your job?
So a lot of times when someone asks us what we do, I tell them we're a financial therapist.
Oh.
So if you can kind of wrap your arms around that, a lot of us know what we need to be doing, and we just choose not to. We have other priorities. And I mean, I can go just in my personal house. We have other priorities that are going on, and saving for retirement may not be at the top of the list. I mean, and look, people who have employment issues that may change, mm-hmm. medical issues that come and go, other catastrophic things that might happen to a home in an emergency situation. So I get it. We understand, and we don't talk down to someone who's going through those. We can understand that and rationalize exactly what you're going through, because a lot of it we've been through ourselves, and so I think to really, from a, again, back to the financial therapy standpoint, we have to be able to talk one-on-one with you and make you feel comfortable and understand why it's important. And I think the most difficult part, which is, but it's also what we're good at, is getting in to your shoes and really understanding, and you know, what it is that drives you, what motivates you, and you know, what would give you passion to want to provide for your family's future 40 years down the road.
Mm, yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. And then so the opposite side of that, what's the funnest or the most rewarding part?
Oh, that this is easy. we probably have 200 clients, retirement plans up in. Is learning to see what everyone does for a living.
Oh,
so
yeah.
To walk into Rita Solutions, and again, we're joking on the dimly lit.
It's quiet. This
is the only client. Well, actually, I have one other client that I've walked into that's been this way. But y'all were the first one. I walked into the office and it was dimly lit.
You could take a nap.
And I could take a nap. But you got all these computer tech nerds on here going to town, and I'll say that in a complimentary way. Or going into a fabrication shop and seeing what it is they're actually manufacturing in their facility. We talked to a recent fab shop about manufacturing gun parts. I mean, just really neat things, and learning about the different industries in the parish and in Louisiana for that matter. And that is, to me, it is super exciting, super fun. We're not doing, even though we're given the same messaging, we're not doing the same thing with the same people every day. We're constantly in different areas, even like on the medical side, understanding what the specific doctor or nurse does and what their specialty is. It's not something you get every day by sitting behind a computer and a calculator.
I guess that makes sense, because you work with like a whole wide variety of companies, and so you get insight that most of us wouldn't have.
We you know, our client base is, you know, we have concrete companies, banks, sugar mills, construction companies, accounting firms, medical groups, legal groups, you name it. We serve IT groups. We have, you know, we have you all. We have an app-based company, industrial construction company, a lot of oil field service companies. You know, and then you break into oil field service and like, okay, what do you do in the service? So you're on the production side of it. You're on the drilling side of it. What are you operating? And so it really, for us, we get to learn every day on our job about other people's, and it's fun to learn about all the new industries, and keeps us on our toes as well to be able to be really up to date on what's affecting our customers. So we sit in the offices, you know, even though we're meeting with employees, a lot of times we're sitting in the owner's office, the CFO's office. We're understanding what's keeping them up at night as well, from a regulation standpoint, and so we can take some of that messaging back in our industry and try and make it easier for them to do what it is that they do. And so that's pretty exciting for us as well.
Awesome. My final question was to do with your charity work. Is there something that you'd like to do in terms of charitable things that you haven't done yet?
That would be hard to find, Jason. I don't know.
Well, there's been so many, I know, but there's always something, right?
So here's one thing I would at some point, and this is something, because financial literacy is something that, that I have not explored, that I think is something that I, at some point, that I would like to get into.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
To educate, whether it's on the adult level or on the high school level, but financial literacy is something that I think we as a state, as a region, as a country even, we need to focus more on. It's not in our educational systems anywhere. You can't find it anywhere. They've prioritized other things, and for right, wrong, and different, I just think and regardless of your career path, whether you are a doctor, an IT programmer, accountant, a banker, we walk into banks and they have some of the similar problems with financial literacy, and not to undermine, you know, any particular, but I mean, it's all walks of life that have difficulty understanding and grasping the concepts that we think are important. But to answer your question in a little bit different direction, Jamie Nelson Hebert was a teacher of mine in high school, and she had a program. She was a religion teacher, a campus ministry teacher at Catholic High. It was called at the time it was popular, which y'all are going to be familiar with it, but practice in random acts of kindness and senseless acts of beauty. I have fun doing things randomly kind for people. So you talk about what haven't you done. There's so many randomly nice things that you can do for other people, and to challenge other people to do that. And a lot of times being anonymous about it and having fun with it, if you can create that game within yourself to just do good things for other people and maybe not have them have any idea of where the kindness came from, it's even that much more effective and that much more important to the person who's receiving that kindness. And it's something that that really, really, if you haven't done it before, try it once. See how it makes you feel. If it makes you feel good, try it a second time.
Yeah.
And share with somebody else the idea of doing it and see how that that builds on itself. If we all did these more randomly kind a little bit more often, we would... although Acadiana is the happiest place in America to live, we would be even that much happier if we did more.
Yeah.
All right, we can't top that.
I know. I think that's a great note. Great question, Jason. Yeah.
Thank you very much for being here, Bo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, pretty awesome. I appreciate y'all having me. This is the first podcast I've ever participated in.
So glad you've been here.
I'm a rookie podcaster, and this has been fun.
Awesome.
Y'all make it very comfortable to be here. So
thank you so much. You're a great guest. I want to thank Bo Beaulieu, partner with CoSource Financial Group, and very much an active part of the Iberia Parish community. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. And I want to thank Raider Solutions, Jason Sikora, thank you, and Iberia Bank for being sponsors of this podcast. And thank you for listening. For this podcast and all of our podcasts, you can go to discoverlafayette.net, or you can just hit the little purple icon on your phone and subscribe to Discover Lafayette. And for anyone interested in sponsoring the show, you can reach out to me on the website. We'd love to talk with you. We need community support, and we're honored to be carrying this message. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you.